The panels are such an incredible experience. It's hard to describe what it's like to sit at a panel in game. There's this level of immersion that you don't get from watching the VOD. You almost feel like you are there at a convention watching someone present. It's incredible how immersed you can get in a panel.
Hello, hello everyone. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Phalanx, and welcome to the Datapack Podcast, episode 15 now, I think.
Pretty sure it's episode 15. As we're recording this, last week was the Smith Summit, which we briefly mentioned in our previous episode. For anyone who doesn't know, the Smith Summit was this basically online Datapack summit or convention, and it all happened virtually within a Minecraft world, and there were these booths which different people set up to showcase datapacks and projects they had made and were working on. And there were also the panels where people could essentially present something to a live audience with slides and stuff like that. Basically, this episode, we're going to be talking about how we found the Smith Summit, what we liked, what we thought of it, and hopefully next episode, we're going to have some of the staff, or at least one staff member who was responsible for organizing the summit, and we will talk with him about a bit behind the scenes and the organization process.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Well, I guess I'll start off saying Smith Summit was really awesome. I don't think I've ever attended anything quite like it before. In Minecraft or in real life, I've been to conventions before. Very different vibe having a virtual convention. Obviously, you don't have to actually walk around. You can play a game while moving around, which is fun. And obviously, there's a level of interaction at a like virtual convention that you don't see at a more traditional offline convention. So I think that's quite a unique experience, really. And if you missed out on Smith Summit this year, I've heard rumors that it might be coming back next year. So make sure to check it out if it does happen again.
I really hope it does.
It's a really great experience. I hope it does.
I really enjoyed it as well. I haven't really been to a convention before. I've been to a conference, which is sort of different, at least, I think.
If a convention was only panels.
It's basically, I've been to this one conference a few times, which is basically just a series of talks throughout the day, and then, you know, there's like a social event at the end where everyone talks to other people. But yeah, it's much less sort of interactive than, I guess, what a convention would be. And yeah, I've certainly never been to an online Minecraft convention, because there's obviously something different when you're talking to someone in person than virtually. But on the flip side of that, you can do a whole lot more in something like Minecraft, because you have access to all these, you know, you can do anything, really. In a physical convention, you're limited to the real world, right? And there's only so much you can do within the budget of the convention. Whereas in Minecraft, it costs you nothing to add little launch pads which launch you up the big cliffs and stuff, or the trams which take you all around Summit Island, and all the other little interactive things that they had in the convention server.
Yeah, unfortunately, in real life conventions, you don't get launch pads, which is very disappointing. Yeah. I wish they did.
And also, there's no bug in real life where if you log out on Launchpad, then you get infinite jump boost. We can talk about that a bit later, maybe.
I'm a little bit peeved that they patched that one. And yeah, I'll ramble about it later on, I guess, when we get to that. I guess we can move on to, we actually made a booth, Smith Summit. And in fact, if any of our regular listeners may have noticed that some of our episodes didn't exactly come out on time recently. And the reason for that is that we have spent the last month or two working on our booth for Smith Summit and getting everything ready for that. And it was quite fun to make a booth.
Yeah.
What was your experience, Gears, of making the booth with me?
And Wolfian.
And Wolfian, yeah.
So yeah, should mention basically Wolfian. Neither of us, as I'm sure we've mentioned before, are really like builders at all in Minecraft. And so we thought, you know, if we tried to build the booth, it would end up not looking great and it would kind of just be a bit rubbish. And so we asked Wolfian, who's been on this show once before. He built all the structures for Code of Copper during that first jam we both took part in. He's done a few other things for us. And so, yeah, we thought we could take the airship from Code of Copper and use that as part of the booth. It wasn't actually our idea originally. We were going to just have... I mean, we didn't have that much of an idea. I was thinking some sort of steampunk factory type thing, because in our booth, we did sort of display all the different projects we've worked on, you know, Zoglin, this podcast, but the main focus of it was Code of Copper, because that's the most interactive one. You know, you can have the copper golem in the world and you can run programs and see it react to the changes you make, and we thought that would be by far the most interesting. Actually, Curious, which is one of the staff members who was sort of in charge of the building and the coordinating of the booths, he had, I guess, looked at the Code of Copper page on Modrinth or whatever, and he'd seen the airship, and he was like, oh, what if you had your main booth, which was just like a small little building somewhere on the mainland, and then you had some way to get up to this airship, which would be, you know, above it or above the water. That turned out super well in the end.
I'm so glad he suggested that, because it really made our booth stand out. I feel like having this big airship that you can visit, and then you're high up in the sky, you can see the entire convention from this airship. And in fact, we even built it in such a way that it's actually at war with the neighboring booth. Shout out to, I think, the Expansion. Yeah, it's a really cool looking space data pack that we should check out sometime. But yeah, we'll put a link down in the description or in the show notes if you're curious about that that data pack. I should probably as well just, I realize we haven't given much context to any listeners that weren't at the event. Different data pack developers could submit a booth to the event, and which is basically we were given a small plot on this big island to build, and we were pretty much given free rein, and we could build a booth as well as submit a data pack to accompany the booth to add functionality and demonstrate our different data packs. So I just figured we should probably add that as a bit of context as to what a booth is. As we said, built this big, well, Wolfian extended on the original Code of Copper airship, and we put that in the world as well. Yeah, and then inside the airship was the copper golem, which you wired up, Gears.
Yeah, I mean, if you're watching on video right now, maybe it'd be cool if you could put some screenshots up of what our booth looked like, because Wolfian did a great job. Like, we started with, I was just thinking, okay, let's just take the Code of a Copper airship and then maybe rip out the interior and make it a bit more open for the booth so we could have like a showcase room and stuff like that. But Wolfian went above and beyond and essentially redid the entire thing, redid the interior, redid the exterior. He made it bigger. And well, one thing that has changed since we released Code of Copper is they've added so many new copper blocks. And so he was able to use all of the new variants of copper to, you know, create something which looked amazing, basically. Then what I did is I took the Code of Copper data pack and all its dependencies and tried to bundle them in a way that would work for the world specifically. Since there ended up being, I think, 51 booths in total, we couldn't have all been running super heavy data packs, because it just would have completely killed the server. And so we were all told to basically, you know, make some optimizations, like instead of doing an at-e check for all the entities which could potentially exist in the world that are copper golems, what we did instead was we just hard-coded the UUID of the golem, and then we just executed as that. That saved quite a lot of performance. So I basically rewrote the entirety of Code of Copper, which is actually pretty small now. Code of Copper by itself isn't that big a data pack, so it didn't take me that long. Yeah, it was fun looking back on the code and seeing the old code that we haven't touched in so long, and seeing how it all worked and remembering writing it and stuff.
Especially so much of that, especially like the entity interaction and all of that, like basically what was left of Code of Copper after we split Golem Script out into its own library is really like the original fundamental bones that haven't been touched for so long in that project. Yeah. Like probably code there like over a year old at this point. And so while Gears was working on getting Code of Copper to run in the Smith Summit, I was in charge of gluing essentially the booth together. We had a couple of functionalities of the booth now that we added because, well, we need to be able to get from this little booth on the island to the big airship in the sky. So an idea I had for that was that it would be fun to get shot out of a cannon. I thought, and I was kind of inspired. There's an old platformer game, Mario game, called Super Mario 64. It's for the Nintendo 64. And one of the mechanics in that game is you can enter a cannon and then you can aim the cannon and it will shoot Mario through the sky and onto like a platform or anywhere really that you aimed it. And it's quite fun. And when you get in the cannon, it like makes this little like noise and loads up and then you can aim and shoot. So I really took inspiration from that and also the sound effects from that. And implemented that into the booth. So, yeah, while Gears was adding Code of Copper, I was implementing a goofy little cannon. And then for the actual shooting, that was 2 hours of me testing out values on an armor stand to see what particular motion values I had to give it to get to the airship, but after twiddling with those for a good while, eventually got that working, and then you just slash ride the player onto the armor stand and off they go.
Yep.
So that was quite fun to implement.
I knew that you would probably have to end up tweaking the motion values and just basically doing trial and error until you got something that was working, so that's why I asked you to work on the cannon and I got to work on the Code of Copper bit. That was just re-implementing stuff I already knew how to do.
Give the hard one to me, is it? No, it wasn't too hard. It was just tedious.
Yeah.
Oh, but the other thing I'll point out is that so we solved right how to get onto this airship, but we needed a way to get back off of it, right? And so now we did a little bit of a cheeky thing here, right? We were like, okay, you know what? We're going to give players an elytra. And, well, like, we did ask permission for this, and they were a little bit iffy at the start, but eventually we got approval for this elytra. And I'm really glad we did, because it was so fun to go up there on the airship and then jump off and glide over the server. Like, because it's so high up, and then you just get to glide and pretty much go anywhere on the server that you want to, which means you can glide into potential soft locks, but you can slash trigger spawn.
Yeah, luckily they accounted for that.
They accounted for that.
Yeah, bad stuff would happen.
Although trigger spawn often broke. That was an issue of the server. The airship was really fun to put together. And I think it turned out really well. Like we got some feedback from the form. Basically, you submit a form at the end of the summit, we got some feedback that people really enjoyed our booth, so that was good to hear.
Question is, how much of it was the Elytra and how much was the Golem itself? I guess we'll never know.
We'll never know.
But yeah, so, I mean, there was a bit of an unfortunate timing with the summit, because, Mox, you were actually away until about a month before the summit started. Is that right?
Yeah.
And...
yeah, so, I'm pretty sure when we got invited to Smith Summit, I had just started my Europe trip.
Yeah.
So I think I was in Berlin at that point. And I get this DM from someone I didn't recognize, and I thankfully pressed accept on the message request, and I think it was RX reached out to me and was like, hey, do you want to be involved in this data pack convention we're putting together? Right, and we'll probably talk more about that message in particular next episode. But basically, I talked to Gears and we were like, hell yeah, let's do something. But obviously, I wasn't really that available at that time, and neither was Wolfian, because I was actually visiting him while we were in Europe. So both of us were a little bit occupied at that point, yep. Meaning that we didn't have as much time to work on everything as we could have.
Yeah, I think...
which made it a little stressful.
If you guys had been available for the entirety of... it was pretty much 2 months before the summit started that they messaged you, I think.
Yeah.
And... yeah, so for the first month of that, it was basically just me working by myself to get Code of Copper going, and I was also working a lot on Zoglin, because, as we'll talk about in a minute, we also hosted a panel on Zoglin, and we wanted to have it in a nice state that we could release it when the panel happened, so that we could say, here's this thing we've been working on, and you can try it out now, because we didn't want to have it so that... we just said, oh yeah, here's this thing we're working on, but yeah, it's not really in a state you can use it yet, so it's just hypothetical at the moment.
Mm.
So yeah, I basically was working a lot on those two things during that time, and then after you guys got back, we started work on the booth, and there was certainly a bit of crunch time towards the end.
Well, the funny thing is, there was this gap, right? When I got back from my Europe trip, there was a gap of, like, I think 3 days before Wolfian went on another trip. And that was the time in which he had to build both of the booths. So he managed to build the airship and the little booth itself in this, like, tiny window of time. And then thankfully, of course, we could go and, like, populate it with all the text displays and stuff. But that was interesting as well.
But it turned out fine in the end. Like, it was pretty much in the state that we wanted it to be when the time of the summit came. And
yeah,
it didn't go too badly. Like, there were a couple of weird bugs that seemed to happen mid summit. I don't know exactly what happened. Once the cannon stopped working, once the minecart from the Golem was randomly just gone, they only seemed to persist for 12 hours or so, and we reported them. And the Smith team were really good. They had a channel for all the booth vendors to report any bugs that they found, and then they go through and fix them when they could.
Yeah.
And because they had this, like, multiple hubs set up where they would all have the same thing, because having everyone on the same single server instance at the same time was just too much, so they had 8 or so, maybe 7 hubs, which you could go to, and they each had a copy of the world, and you could essentially interact with the things the same on all of them. So they would only ever be broken on one hub at a time. Let's maybe just go back to, like, the experience of just attending the summit in general and just what it was like.
So the summit had a passport, which was a little book, and every booth that you would visit would grant you a stamp. And so there was a fun little game of the summit to try and visit every booth, right? And I really enjoyed trying to collect these stamps. And I know, I feel like you enjoyed it as well, Gears, because I know that you completed the stamp book long before I did.
Did you complete it in the end?
I did, yeah. I managed to do that as well. Another fun little game, which was also a little bit of a nightmare to do, was find all of the plushies. So they hid these little Smithy plushies, which Smithy is their little anvil-themed mascot of the convention.
I think of just Smith in general.
And Smith in general, yeah. And so you could find these little coloured anvils hidden around the place. And if you found them all, you got... if you found them all for a region, you'd get that plushie. And then if you found all of the plushies, you'd get this special Smithy balloon as well. So I did end up managing to find all of them, which was a massive task. I may have resorted to free cam and turning on hitboxes to be able to find that. but yeah, that was super fun as well. As well, the booths themselves were like a pleasure to explore, really. And there was one in particular I think the both of us quite enjoyed. Do you want to go on about that one, Gears?
Yeah, so each of the booths had their own style and their own theme. The booths themselves, the buildings, were generally built as a sort of themed similar to whatever the project they were representing is. And they had stuff like custom models to showcase things from their data pack, or text displays showing or explaining information about it, or item displays showing screenshots of various parts of the data pack. And some of them, for example, our booth had an interactive element. And I think one thing I actually put in the feedback form of the Smith Summit is that I think it would be cool to have even more interactive booths. I would say maybe 20 to 30% of the booths had an interactive element to them. Some of them had small interactions, like, you know, clicking on a button to teleport you up to the next floor or stuff like that, but some of them had really interactive things like a mini parkour course or a small puzzle or something like that. And those were the ones I had most fun in, and those were the ones that stuck in my memory the most, because they were like, I actually got to experience the data pack itself in the world without having to go and download it from the thing and just essentially looking at the text displays. Yeah, the one I think you were referring to is one called Bubba Is You, which is a data pack based on basically an indie puzzle game, and somebody made it in a data pack. And they had a booth on the server, and you could basically play, I think, a subset of the levels. And it's just such a well-designed and fun game. Basically, you're this little character, you're a little sort of rabbit in this two-dimensional world, and there's a bunch of pieces of text around which essentially govern the rules of the game. And what you can do is you can move around and you can push these pieces of text around and basically change the rules.
Yeah, basically, it's all about thinking outside of the box. And I think that's what I really enjoyed about playing Bubba Is You. And I mean, yeah, it plays with your expectations, right? And you gotta like really think about the different elements it's given you, the different like rules that it's set up, and how you can twist these rules and how you can change these rules to be able to win the game. So maybe it's like you can't get to the flag, right? But maybe you can make it that instead of the flag being the win condition, a rock is the win condition, and then you just need to touch a rock, right? So it's all like playing with those different expectations there.
And somehow it feels almost analogous to making a data pack, where you have these tools available to you, and you're trying to get to a given solution, and you can't get there directly. The tools don't give you the means to get there directly, but you can find a roundabout way through various tricks to essentially bend what you can do and use and exploit certain mechanics of different things to get to the end result.
Yeah,
and there's some really interesting puzzles in there, like the one, I really like the one where you have to basically make it so that you don't represent any character in the thing, so that you can essentially get pushed across this barrier which you couldn't normally touch, otherwise you'd lose, and then you essentially get reanimated at the other end, and then you can go to the flag and win, which is just is such a genius thing. Now, I think all the levels were designed by the original creator of the game, and then it was basically just implemented in Minecraft by this guy, but yeah, it's still, I think it would have been so fun to implement, like I would have really enjoyed trying to implement that in Minecraft, I think.
Yeah, and it's like surprisingly intuitive to play in Minecraft. Like, I think it was Triashter was the dev of the data pack, did a really good job of making it so that it's intuitive to play, that the controls make sense, and
yeah, it is.
That it is a really fun time. And we spent hours in that booth.
Yeah, we
completed all the different levels.
All but one level, I think. We were on the last level when we had to go and see a panel, and then we didn't finish it. But I do want to download the pack, because I think there are more levels which you weren't able to play in the summit, and I do want to try and solve those. Let's talk about the panels, I guess, because that was also another big part of the convention. So while the booths were essentially just static builds with data packs that you could essentially just go and visit in your own time, the server was up 24/7 throughout the week. Yeah, so those were just, you know, you could go in there and see what the creators have to show you. But then the panels were like a live presentation, you know, you would sit in the audience in Minecraft physically, and they did such a good job. You know, they made a system where you could essentially, you design your slides in whatever, Google Slides or PowerPoint or something like that, and then you export it as a PDF, and they had written some tool that you just give them the PDF, and that tool will generate a data pack and a resource pack that lets you essentially do that in Minecraft. So it would, I guess, generate the textures for the different slides and bind them to certain custom model data values. And basically you could just flick through the slides using trigger commands, and it just, it worked so well. Basically you would sit in Minecraft and you would watch the presentation in a physical, well, in a virtual Minecraft convention hall. And then there was also a Discord stage in the server itself where you would listen to the audio, and they also streamed it to YouTube.
And we'll as well link the Smith, channel in the show notes in the description. Go check it out. There's a bunch of panels that were recorded. I mean, all of the panels were recorded, and there's a bunch of really good topics that are well worth watching if you're interested in data packs, which I assume you are if you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, unless you just randomly clicked on this video and watched for 40 minutes.
And look, if you've stayed that long, you should go check it out.
Yeah. We did a panel about Zoglin, and I think we don't need to go into too much detail about that. So we hosted our panel. It was the second panel that was hosted in the summit out of, well, I guess including this opening and closing ceremonies, it was the third out of 16 or 17, I think. And what was nice about that, it was right at the beginning of the day for me. So I basically woke up, got ready for the panel, did the panel, and after that we could just relax for the rest of the summit. Our booth was submitted, our talk was done, and we could just enjoy the rest of the panels, explore the booths, and just, I was so glad we did that then and not at the end, because then we would be, like, the whole time we'd be going through our slides and, like, making sure we were getting everything down, and we did consider at one point, like, moving our panel to the end so we would have more time. I had the thought, like, we were talking about it in the morning for me, and then I was out the whole day, and I came home and I was like, I'd rather just have fun, do the panel, it will go how it goes,
get over and done with.
And then, you know, yeah, and then just be able to relax for the rest of the summit. And I think that,
I think that was the right call
overall. Yeah, yeah,
it was so good. And I gotta say, the panels are such an incredible experience. I it's hard to describe what it's like to sit at a panel in game. Like, you, there's this level of immersion that you don't get from watching the VOD, where it's like you almost feel like you are there at a convention watching someone present. It's like, it's incredible how immersed you can get in a panel, as well. There's that element, but there's also this element of you, because there's a chat, right? You can have this discourse throughout the panel without disrupting the actual panel going on, because the panelist just has their chat disabled, so they can't see the chat, but everyone in the audience can. So in real time, as new things are brought up, new slides, they show off something cool, you can see all of the people reacting in the chat, like spamming emojis or being like, oh my god, that's so cool. Yeah. And it's just such a great experience. I think of the entire summit, I think the panels were my favorite part. Like, even though I really did love Bubba's You, great booth, but I think of my favorite part of the summit was the panels, and as well, like, hanging out with people after the panels, because a lot of people had a simple voice chat installed, meaning that they could talk to people nearby them, right, in game, which is Hermitcraft uses it, the Life series uses it. And it's so great for, like, just having spontaneous discussions and, like, just hanging out with people in game, which is really awesome. And we had great discussion after our Zoglin panel with people wanting to talk about data pack preprocessors and, like, you know, different elements of building tooling for MC function and stuff like that, which was just so awesome. I really enjoyed that.
It was such a great element. Like, I think that really made it, like, I think if it was just the booths, it would have been cool, but the panels brought a sort of, an extra element. It was more interactivity, because then you would get to speak to other people, because during the booths, like, when I was just online by myself between panels or whatever, and I was just exploring the booths, I was pretty much doing it alone, and I wasn't really talking to anyone else in there. But during the panels, you got to see all the interesting ideas that people had, and people got to share their ideas with others, and then afterwards you could talk to them, you could talk to the panel hosts, you could talk to other people who were there at the panel, and it was just such a good experience overall. And one thing that I found is just, I was so inspired after seeing, especially on the first day. I mean, so the summit basically started on, like, Saturday evening for me, and then I was sort of out at the time, so I wasn't really able to take part in the opening ceremony, unfortunately. But then on Sunday, that was when we had our talk, Sunday morning. And that was when I really got to experience it, because there was about something like 6 talks on Sunday every couple of hours. So what I would do is I would watch a talk, and I would see all the things in the talk, and then I would go and look at some booths during the wait time between the next one, and then I'd go to the next one. And yeah, it was just such a good, I was just so inspired by all the different things people were showing they were doing by the booths and the panels. It was just so cool to see everything.
And I gotta say, it's made me kind of jealous as well, seeing all of these awesome, like, data packs. Is like, it kind of got me. Like, I feel like personally, I've been super burnt out on data packs, like, or especially like survival content kind of data packs for just so long, and it's really inspired me to want to make. And we've been talking about this privately, want to make, I guess, more, like, content packs, more data packs that add something to the world that's not just technical conceptual packs.
Yeah. I think that's the same for me. I've been like a bit burnt out on data packs, and I hadn't really written much MC function code at all since making the code for the booth, except for whatever I was writing in like the Zoglin compiler, but that's almost nothing. And yeah, I was feeling quite burnt out as well, but yeah, the Smith Summit has really feel like it's revived my passion for data packs and like given me inspiration to continue making stuff.
Yeah. I feel like as well, there's this element of the Smith Summit. I feel like it's the first time I've really seen the data pack community, I feel like, come together as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like the data pack community, like, there's data pack hub, that's a community, there's Smith, that's a community, there's Minecraft commands. Like, I feel like the data pack community is almost like fractured in a way. It's split across multiple different communities and different people, different groups. And I feel like this is the first time I've seen everyone in the data pack community, like almost everyone, come together just under one roof and really collaborate and just hang out, just be together. And like it was truly incredible, like, moment, I feel like, for the data pack community. And I think honestly this Smith Summit is going to be seen as a big turning point for the community going forwards. I feel like there's so many connections forged. I feel like so many different people, I mean, it kind of reminds me of like how Data Pack Jam felt at a much smaller scale in the early days, where it was bringing together a bunch of people passionate about data packs and really like forging new connections. And I feel like Smith Summit has taken that to like 11. Like, it is so many, I feel like so many new cool things are going to, like, we're going to hear stories like 2 or 3 years down the line. It's like, oh yeah, we met at Smith Summit, or yeah, I was really inspired by something I saw there. It reminds me of like, you hear of those industry conventions, right? Where a bunch of professionals in an area get together and really show off the state of the art. And I feel like that is as well what we got there, is we got to see so many cool state of the art data pack technologies. And yeah, it was incredible, honestly.
Yeah, that's one thing, like, and we've definitely talked about this before. We mentioned it when we were talking to some of the Datapack Hub team. We make quite a lot of datapacks, but we don't actually play that many datapacks. So I'm not always necessarily aware of all the different things the different pack that exists. There were so many datapacks at Smith Summit, which I'd never heard of before. The Smith Summit was such a good way to explore all those and get a good feel for all these data packs at once without having to go and individually download each one and try it out and stuff like that. Because, you know, downloading 50 separate data packs and playing them all on different worlds, no one's going to do that. But if you have one world with 50 different little mini things that you can do and look at, it just makes it so much more interesting, and it is a really nice way to find projects that people have made.
And as well, it feels so much more personal rather than seeing a bunch of screenshots on like a Modrinth or Planet Minecraft page and reading a description. Like, just being able to walk into this booth that you can just see like countless hours have been spent crafting this experience for you. And you get to see like all of the love that has gone into this data pack and like how proud they are to be presenting this thing to you. It really, like, you get this feeling like, oh, I really should be checking out all of this stuff that like you just don't get from browsing Modrinth or Planet Minecraft or wherever else you find data packs.
Seeing the rooms and the different models and stuff, it feels so much more interactive and immersive than a two-dimensional web page which you just scroll up and down and read the text and see the images and stuff.
And I really do hope that we're going to get a world download of Smith Summit, because I really do want to go back and look through the booths again. I really do encourage when there is a world download out, we'll try and remember to update the description of this video it is really worth just checking out the map itself, because it is an incredible map. There's hours and hours of the Smith team building this space. Like, it really felt alive. They did an excellent job. All of the different components from the trams moving around, just adding all this life to the jump pads, as we've mentioned before. And then every single booth as well is just so well made and well done. And just there's this like collective hours and hours of just these hours and hours dedicated to each booth, plus hours and hours dedicated to the entire event as a whole. And it's just a really incredible map.
Yeah,
well worth your time to check it out.
Yeah, and I think we'll get into this a bit more when we actually we can get some of the staff on. If it happens again, and I really hope it will, and I think the plan is that it will, but I feel like it's just going to get better from here. One thing that I thought is that there was a lot of things that were being done for the very first time. Like, the tool that takes a PDF and converts it to a Minecraft data pack and resource pack, nobody's done that before. Integrating 50 different data packs and resource packs all into one server that runs all together, and they all have to be working separately in different parts of the world, that's not been done before either, right?
I would just add that the data pack community in itself has come such a long way. Data packs have always been famous for just how poorly compatible they are with each other. And to just, like, I feel like 5 years ago, half of these data packs, like, the community around data packs wasn't in the same space as it is now, I feel like. I feel like almost this convention wouldn't have been possible back then. It's really incredible and really heartening to this community that we're a part of.
And I think next time, they don't have to write a tool to convert a PDF to a Minecraft data pack and resource pack, because they already have it. So next time they'll be much better organized, right? They'll have all the tools that they had before easily accessible, and they don't need to rewrite any of that. The groundwork is already set in place now, and I think they'll have learned a lot from the experience. And I'm going to stop talking about this now, because we probably should talk about this with them themselves.
But yeah, I'm honestly so hyped for next year, and I'm even considering offering to them if they need any help, want any help. I'm definitely down to help out, because it's such an incredible event. I'm so glad that it can exist.
As we were saying, after that we were sort of inspired to make some like content data pack, because yeah, we haven't really done that in a long time. A combination of all the different booths, because there were a lot of, you know, most of the booths were like content data packs, and there were also several panels on such things. Like, there were two panels about designing vanilla plus content, and there was also one about this tool called Python Data Pack, and that looked super cool. And all that together just really made me want to try out that side of data packing again.
I'm reminded of the meme. There's the guy in the corner of the party and everyone's having fun. And then the guy's like, they don't know that we're making technical data packs. Like, I feel like we've somehow like sat in the corner off doing our own little thing while everyone's made cool stuff. To be fair, I feel like we have made some cool stuff as well. But like, yeah, there's a different vibe to these content data packs that I feel like I kind of want to tap into. But I feel like as well, we can still add our technical flair to them.
I think we could do somehow a combination of both. Like, we had this idea earlier while we were recording the Minecraft segment of this, the video segment, and maybe we'll do a separate podcast episode with our new experimental format, designing a data pack on the podcast and sort of walking through our thought process on that. So maybe we can do that after our next part of this. Now, speaking of new formats, we were going to do a section on the latest snapshot news, and we kind of forgot about that.
Yeah, and we can discuss some of that.
There may even be a snapshot live right now. Ah, there is. One has come out as we've been recording this podcast. So now you know we record these. Okay, so let's quickly talk about what the previous snapshot was that came out last week. That was basically a complete revamp of item models. So they basically added a whole new format to resource packs, which let you specify in great detail customizations for models of items. It's super cool what you can do with it now. Like, I was looking through some of the vanilla stuff and I was reading through all the different things. You can do stuff like compositing models, where you take two different models and merge them together. That's used in stuff like the bundle, where you have the little item poking out. You can do conditional things. And also, you can control all this via custom model data. Custom model data got a complete overhaul in what it is, and it basically does something completely different now to what it did before. And you can do all sorts of cool things.
So cool. You can tint a model now, so you can change the color of a model programmatically, which means that you could theoretically create a pixel display and change the tint of each pixel and have a dynamic display in Minecraft, which is such a cool thing that's come about from these changes.
I know we were talking about the idea of making some sort of virtual machine when we were talking about data packs we'd like to work on, which was so long ago now. That was like our second episode, I think, or third episode. That would just make it so much more possible, because instead of having a separate item display for every pixel, which was what we would have needed to do then, we can now just essentially just have one item display and just write to the different thing individually, or we can have like chunks.
Yeah, it's super cool. I'm just looking over the new snapshot changes. There's now a way of getting the local time and it having formatted.
Is that where?
I'm not fully. It's in the model item models section.
Okay, so yeah, let's see. So it's mostly resource pack changes again.
From what I'm understanding here is that you could have a model that changes its display based on the time. So you could make a digital clock item.
So they had that just as a Christmas thing, for like the chess Christmas thing, and now you can just do it based on local time.
Which is so cool. That's so cool. You can make like a digital clock, theoretically, or something like that. I don't know the full implications of this, because I haven't properly grokked the entire new model system yet, but from the looks of this, this is a super cool change.
Oh, and also I think you can, yeah, so this one lets you change the item model based on which kind of entity is holding it, so you can have like a different model for players versus zombies versus armor stands versus whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh yeah. You can also check if a certain keybind is down, so
oh really. Oh, that's awesome!
Yeah, so they initially had one to check if shift's down, and people were wondering, like, is that if you're sneaking, or is that... and that's just if you're pressing shift. Like, have you seen some mods have, like, an extended tooltip whenever you are pressing shift? Like, they have a summary, and then you hold shift, and it shows more information. So they have that as one thing you can do, and that can't be rebound, that's always shift. But now they've added a separate one, which can detect any keybind, basically, to see if a keybind is down.
Oh, you know what this all lends itself to like a card game? All these like models, tooltips, and keybinds.
Although I don't actually think you can, weirdly, I don't think you can make that tooltip like detail summary thing with shift, because that's only to modify the item model itself and not the tooltip, I'm pretty sure. So that's kind of annoying.
Things are really looking up for data packs. Like, I'll just say this: if you've been on the fence about getting into data packing, maybe you're watching, listening to this podcast, or watching data pack related content because you're not sure. Now is the perfect time to get in. There's so much like momentum. I feel like Mojang has really been focusing on improving data packs. Obviously, there was just Smith Summit. Their whole community is still buzzing from that. There's so many cool projects going on. Data Pack Hub and the Data Pack Wiki is coming up. And like already plenty of articles on there. Data Pack Hub is a great place to get, just shilling Data Pack Hub, to get help It is the perfect time to get into data packs if you're on the fence about it.
Oh, and also it looks like they fixed the bug where rabbits get stuck on the edge of blocks, you know, where they sort of end up walking into blocks and just can't do anything. So that's good as well.
Oh, nice.
There's no new data pack news, really. But yeah, so that's cool. Lots of new changes to item models, and I'd really like to see like the full extent of what you can do, because they definitely added a lot of features to this which aren't used in vanilla. Like, I feel like often what they do as a starting point when they're making something more data-driven is they take everything they need in vanilla and they convert that to some way of doing that in a data-driven way. But in this, it looks like they've done a lot of stuff which is never used in vanilla and is just for doing custom data pack stuff, and it is super cool.
It's really showing that they are actually prioritizing data packs. And I think Ulraf was the name?
Yeah.
We had a Mojang developer come to Smith Summit and got to hear him talk. And he said, he himself has said that Mojang really does care. Like, a lot of the people working on the game really do care about data packs and the data pack community. And really, like, he's saying now they're in a really good spot that they can actually start to work on these features. Like, supposedly the last few years has been putting out a lot of fires, like refactoring a lot of the code. And I'm just paraphrasing. I'm not saying word for word what was actually said, but like, now Minecraft's in a much better place to start being able to introduce these features. And so it's no accident all of this is coming out now.
And if you want to actually hear that, he was on in a panel they called Fireside Chats, which was another cool thing in the event, which we didn't really talk about. But if you look on, if you look for Fireside Chats in the Smith channel, which again, we'll link in the description and show notes.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, next episode, hopefully we will have RX and maybe someone else from the Smith team on.
I think it's seeming like right now it could be Nexus. But yeah, we'll have to see. We're still working out a time slot.
Yeah.
Next episode, Smith Summit interview. Let's go. Hopefully, if next episode comes out and it's not, well, something's gone catastrophically wrong. But yeah.